So I want to open this up to your thoughts and experience and questions.
Thank you so much, Janina. Wow. Yeah. So any thoughts? Any so much, right? Yeah.
Janina, I'd love to say, I feel like I'm always trying to work in this way. I'm always trying to move towards process. And with some clients, I feel like, that induction has happened more successfully. And in some clients, I struggle with some clients, I struggle more. So I was just really appreciating the kind of subtleties you're bringing in as far as the way that people are more often to object, like if you use the word body, the ways that you can sort of arrive at different ways of being mindful, also without using the word mindful or mindfulness, because I find that's another one where some people love it, some people really have their guard up when words like that are used.
Absolutely. I even had a client who wanted to meditate. So, at the start of each session, she said, "Well, this is a good idea, mindful. I like that idea. So we'll start each session by meditating." So we would meditate for, I don't know, 3 to 5 minutes. And then she would start talking, and she wouldn't stop until the end of the hour. So we were no more mindful and embodied than we were before the meditation period. Yes. I think it's very hard. That's partly how I learned to slow my pace. And again, sometimes that's irritating to clients, but I think this is where the social engagement system also comes in. Because if the client complains that I'm talking too slowly, I can laugh. I can say, "Yes, you're right. You are, unfortunately have this very, very slow talking therapist. I'm so sorry." And what do you notice that's irritating about this pace? I would love to know. And so oftentimes, I'm also letting go of trying to sell them on mindfulness. I mean, I am trying to sell them, but I sort of let go of it being so much of a goal. And instead, I just try to embody it. So the client's saying, "And yesterday and the day before and 2 days before that." And I'm saying, "Wow, I notice a lot of feelings about the past few days." And notice, is it difficult or helpful to talk about what these few days were like? I mean, even with people who just, I mean, do you all have this experience? I've had people who walk in, start talking, and don't stop until it's time to end. And so what I started doing was at the beginning of a session, I would say, "We have two choices in any therapy session. You can vent or you can process. And this is your hour and your choice." Venting often brings us some immediate relief. Processing is slower, but it helps to get more deeper change. what would you like? And of course, the vendors all said, well, I want a vent. So then they would start talking. 10 minutes before the end of the hour, I would stop them and I would say, today you made a very important choice about what you wanted. And I'm just going to ask you to check in with yourself and notice, having vented, do you feel better or do you feel worse? Which is the simplest mindfulness question. And it's what I call a stealth question, because the client does not know that you're asking a mindful question, right? Because you have to notice something to know, do you feel better or do you feel worse? And many clients said, well, I feel a lot of relief. I'm glad I vented. And some clients would say, actually, I feel a little bit worse. And I'd say, well, next week you have a chance to make that choice again. And so that noticing what it was like to vent started to help them be more interested in process. Also, the other thing I found is if I can relate the process to the issue that they came in with. Because, you know, so if the issue they came in with is, you know, having no motivation, I could say, you know, having more motivation isn't something we can think our way into, right? To have more motivation, you need a little help from your body. So, right? And so if that's okay with you, we can try to help your body to give you a little more oomph. Because right now it's not helping in the oomph department. Right. So it sounds completely non-embodied and non-mindful, but I'm actually stealthily moving them in that direction. Samira.
Hi, Janina. I just wanted to thank you for all your amazing work. I first encountered your work and the everyone in the interpersonal neurobiology field around 2008, when I was starting to do community mental health, and our organization, our agency had a training program specifically with sensory motor, and it's just, it helps so many kids, so I really,
great
families, and, you know, I just really want to thank you for your contribution to understanding the nuances and speaking to it in a way that, like, gives the therapist enough flexibility to really be in the room and be responsive.
Right. So, right. That's a great way of putting it.
So, yeah, I'm excited to have audience with you. And I have a quick question, which is just, since many of us are practicing more therapy on Zoom these days,
if
you have any tips or tricks or suggestions of ways to modify this when you don't have quite as much access to information, or even, you know, you're only seeing from the chest up, you're not seeing somebody's whole body.
Right.
Yeah, I
just absolutely love that. That is really, I know it's such a shame to have no information from here down. But what I've tended to do, which has been helpful, is to say, you know, I'm going to have to rely on you to observe what's happening. Because if we were in the room together, I could observe and pick up on things that I won't be able to pick up on Zoom. So I'm going to need help from you to notice and let me know what you're noticing. And that tends to work. You know, this, I think, because I think there's something about, you know, it changes the power dynamic a little bit to say, I need your help. I can't do this myself on Zoom. We're going to have to do this together, which I think is what all of us prefer anyway.
Yeah, thank you for that. It makes it more collaborative.
Yeah.
And I've also noticed that for some clients who have a high level of trauma, actually not being in the room allows them to be a little bit more vulnerable and that they're in their home environment, which has been sort of a surprise to see that.
Yes, I know. It's a real wake up call and kind of education to realize how many trauma survivors find sitting in a room with someone actually quite threatening. And this is something that I've also talked about in regard to BIPOC clients with white therapists. It's like, this is such a, all I can think of is I'm seeing pictures of Freud. This is such a white Northern European thing to walk into a room, sit in front of a white person, authority figure, who is staring at you and waiting for you to speak. This is not the path to feeling safe with someone. So I think it's, you know, with Zoom, I did a lot of webinars early in the pandemic on making telehealth more relational, which basically means increasing our use of social engagement, like turning up our volume. So, because in an office, in that two-person space, you can have a very sort of calm demeanor and the client will still pick up your vibes. But if you're on Zoom, you've got to, you know, to sort of play to the back row of the theater. And you know, that's why, I mean, I don't use a lot of gesture, you know, intentionally, but I have tried to make my presence bigger on the screen. Okay. Pilar, Chris.
Oh, I think Pilar had a question.
Did you have a question, Pilar?
Thanks, Chris. It was directly related to what Zamira asked. I think that I've been at this point in the pandemic concerned about the impact of working remotely. And I was just curious to hear if you have any concerns about especially the impact on unconscious somatic communication. Because it's so rich, it's so alive when two people are in the room. I'm noticing, especially with people I've worked with for some time, and there's a lot of trust, right? The capacity to pick up from each other, right, is just so nuanced. And so I'm missing it, and I'm just was curious to hear whatever you have to say about a concern about still working remotely or
yeah. Well, you know, maybe I should have concerns. I'm having this thought, oh my goodness, maybe I should be concerned. But I think given what Zoom has done, it's allowed us to work with people who live at a distance. It's, you know, overcome some of the challenges of getting to therapy, you know, for people without cars, for people who have childcare issues, that, you know, getting to therapy can be a half day project. So I think on balance, I feel there are trade-offs. And I don't feel concerned in the sense of worried. And that might also have something to do with my clients, because I have very, very traumatized clients who, as much as they love being seen in person, in many ways, they can access more remotely.
Thank you.
But I'm going to think about your question. Chris.
Thank you. I've been using your mindful questions from a lecture that I listened to, and I found that really helpful, how to ask mindful questions. So thank you for that. You mentioned embodied emotion, and I was thinking about, I wanted to hear a little bit more about that if you could. And I was thinking about when I notice a client saying something that I find sad, or I'll feel like the beginning of tears. And sometimes I'll even like think that I see a client tearing up, and I'll just ask, what's happening, you know, behind your eyes, or, and I'm always a little bit stuck when a client says like nothing, or like, I'll say, I feel some sadness coming up. Do you feel? And they're just like, no, or even like, you know, talking about that, you know, that happening, do you feel sad right now? No. So just how to work with some of that, if you have any ideas.
Well, you know, I think sadness is one of the most threatening of all the emotions. Sadness and anger are probably the scariest, especially for people who've had hard lives, who've been traumatized, because if they cried, you know, the response would be punitive. If they got angry, obviously, that was very dangerous. So many, many, many trauma survivors are phobic of feeling sad. And so in sensory motor psychotherapy, one of the things we do is we don't label emotion. We say, oh, some emotion coming up. Or actually with someone like that, I would just say, something's happening, huh? I noticed a shift. Because what I know is, I'm thinking of a client of mine who she'll start going, and if I said, oh, some sadness coming up, she would say, no, no. But if I say, oh, I noticed a shift, and she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I say, well, just notice, right? Just notice what's happening. Just describe. And usually if I can kind of hang out there and I can stay relaxed, that's part of the key, is because I'm communicating, you know, there's a little shift right there. Could you just describe what's happening, right? Just notice. And usually with, you know, just again, hanging out and being relaxed about it, because I think for the clients who are phobic of sadness, if we're really, you know, if I'm goal oriented, if I'm like, okay, sadness, let's go, the client will feel it. Right? I have to treat that sadness the same way I would treat laughter, the same way I would treat hopelessness, so that the client doesn't feel this sense of threat. You're not trying to threaten anybody. You're trying to kind of get to the juice. But even having the agenda can be felt by people, right? So I try to like just let it go as my agenda, hard as that can be sometimes.
Thank you.
I think do we have time for one last question from Natalia?
If you're up for it, Gina, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Janina, for a wonderful talk. Lots of beautiful pieces that I would like to pick up. Maybe I'll just choose one for now. I really appreciate all that you brought in with this talk. One of the pieces perhaps that I would like to ask you about, that your question, is that a feeling, a thought, or a body reaction? It's such a beautiful way to support client, have a little bit, just create a little bit more space and nuance. Mm-hmm. I work with children as an art therapist, and I know children are not as sophisticated to having the reflexive muscles for more nuance, but could I have maybe your insight about how perhaps formulate or invite that kind of little nuance with children? Thank you.
Yeah, no, that's such a great question, because I always think, you know, children are more naturally curious and interested than adults, but they have more difficulty sustaining interest. So I think with children, I think we can ask the same questions. We just have to do it in a way that requires less sustained focusing from them. So if I say, you know, is that a thought? Is that your thinking brain? Or is that your feeling brain? Right? Or, you know, start trying to make it simpler and more playful so that kids can use their natural curiosity. And are the feelings or the thoughts mostly body reactions coming up around the art as they're making it?
Yeah, and there's a swing and a punching bag in the playroom. So sometime when something really big comes up, we're going to use our body and express that with punching bag or swing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, again, I would think of asking questions like, does that feel good in your body? Right? Or does that feel good or bad? That's another stealth mindfulness question, right? When you hit the bag really hard, does that feel good or does it feel bad? Because that's mindfulness. I love stealth mindfulness questions. Right? Any question that involves choices, in sensory motor, we call them menu questions, or you could think of it as multiple choice questions, because I think that also can get a child's curiosity. Because that's what I want to harness, is their innate curiosity. How cool that you're doing this program and working with kids. That's neat. All right, Fiona, I'll shut up now.
No, Janina, thank you so much. Really, we just so appreciate you coming. And then, like I said, this is our, you know, our second class, and just really, you know, get us more centered in the somatic, the Western approach, you know, to somatic psychotherapy. It's just a beautiful dialogue to bring in, a beautiful discussion to bring in for the rest of our time in the program together. So thank you so much.
Oh, so nice to meet all of you. Enjoy the program. It sounds wonderful. Thanks, Fiona. Take care, everybody.
Be well, Janina.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Appreciate you.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, so right, wonderful, Janina. She just offered quite a rich buffet for us to, you know, carry with us, right, as we really get into this dialogue between East and West, between how Tantra you know, uses the body and resources the body, and, you know, keeping Janina's offerings, you know, to us alive.